Hi, and welcome to Walk Talk, a podcast courtesy of the Wound, Ostomy, and Continence Nurses Society. Walk Talk is your opportunity to learn more about advocacy, education, and research that support the practice and delivery of expert healthcare to individuals with wound, ostomy, and continence care needs. Please visit wocn.org/podcast to subscribe and make sure you never miss an episode. Now, here's your host, Jody Scardillo.
Welcome to this week's edition of Walk Talk. I'm your host, Jody Scardillo. This week, I'm delighted to welcome Dan Shockley and Joyce Moss. Dan is a U.S. Navy veteran, hereditary colon cancer survivor, and ostomy advocate. Joyce is a retired wound ostomy continence nurse with over 40 years of experience and Dan's advocacy partner. So thank you both so much for joining me today. I'm excited to talk to you. We have lots of things to talk about. So maybe we'll start with you, Dan, and tell us a little bit about your journey. And you were diagnosed with an unusual and rare disease. And tell us about what happened to you.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate this opportunity to share my journey. I retired from the Navy after 22 years on active duty, Desert Storm, enduring an Iraqi freedom veteran. I served on board 7 different ships, 3 of them deployed to the Persian Gulf at different times. And I retired from the Navy in 2003 at 43 years old, registered with the Veterans Administration Healthcare System. And my first appointment, my primary care doctor said, well, when you turn 50, we encourage you to schedule a colonoscopy. I said, well, put it on the books. I'll be more than happy to have that. So I turned 50, scheduled a colonoscopy, and the results revealed 100 polyps embedded throughout my colon, rectum, and anus. One of those polyps was causing an 80% blockage in my ascending colon. And I was at the VA Medical Center on Oahu in Hawaii, and I was immediately referred to a certified genetic counselor at Triple Army Medical Center there on Oahu. Sat down, and they suspected that I had FAP, and that's the familial adenomatous polyposis. And the gene mutation, of course, is the adenomatous polyposis coli, APC. And it said, now, we have to do DNA sequencing testing. We wait for the results to come back. But in the meantime, you may want to consider, if you do have this mutation, you'll end up be recommended to have a total proctocolectomy with a permanent ileostomy. So the results came back. I didn't know anything about what they were talking about. I mean, I'm not a medical professional, just a very attentive patient. So I was asking lots of questions. And 6 weeks later, the results come back confirming I did indeed have the APC mutation and that I would need the surgery. I didn't have to have it. I would need it. But the longer I waited, any of those 100 polyps have 100% chance of developing into colon cancer. So I got called in to see my colorectal surgeon, my genetic counselor. They revealed the findings to me and then explained to me what was going on. I said, well, I want the surgery. And my colorectal surgeon looks at me, he goes, Daniel, that's what I thought you'd say. I've already scheduled your surgery. It's 2 weeks from today. And I said, perfect. So I'm still asking questions. I'm trying to read any credible resources pertaining to the mutation. And I do that to this day, 13 and a half years later, I'm still asking questions. So we had the total proctocolectomy, permanent ileostomy surgery, and I was equipped by my ostomy nurse at Tripler how to take care of myself. And she brought in a DVD player and a DVD from Hollister for the new patient guide. And I watched it a couple of times and I had no idea what was going on. I mean, theory is one thing, but practical applications are another. And I was pretty beat up because I had 35 staples midline and 13 staples where my anus used to be. So I was uncomfortable just because of the staples and anything. Plus, they took out my colon, rectum, and anus, so they took a lot of real estate out. And my body was trying to figure out what's going on. But I was in for 2 weeks, got released, went home. I was on short-term disability for another 7 weeks and then went back to my jobs. And I looked at this as it's a life-saving surgery. And I just wanted to be able to be a positive impact on those around me, whether they knew about this or not. I like to joke around because humor is the best medicine. So I've embraced having a permanent ostomy from the onset. You know, my mindset is I tend not to think about things I'm not able to control, such as medical issues. What I can't control is my positive attitude. And after this many decades on God's green earth, my positive attitude has brought me this far. Why change now?
Wow. That's quite the story. And then, Joyce, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? And then, Dan, I have further questions for you to ask.
Yeah, I got started with nursing kind of late in life. I actually started at 32 years of age. I'm the oldest of six children, so caregiving was something that I was very accustomed to. And I was interested in doing what I could to help people. So that's why I ended up going into nursing school. Spent the greater part of my years working in psychiatry and intensive care units. And, I guess about 10 years into my career, I was introduced to home health and fell in love with home health. I had always thought that I did a good job preparing patients for discharge until I had the opportunity to meet those patients on the other side and realized that probably 95% of what I said they had forgotten by the time they cleared the driveway at the hospitals. Home health kind of introduced me into a lot of other things. I got interested in looking at medical records, diagnosing, and doing a lot more teaching. And I started a job working as a consultant. So I helped home health agencies get prepared for certification or licensure. So many times I worked with agencies who were on focus review, meaning that they weren't going to get paid until all their records had been thoroughly reviewed. And so that takes a lot of time. Reading through those records and working with many of those agencies, I found there was a lot of misconceptions about wound care. And I became interested in wound care as a result of that. And I thought, you know, I need to learn something about that. So I actually ended up getting my certification in wounds, fell in love with wounds, and wounds was my passion for probably about 20 years or so. And I always took many of those patients had ostomies, and I did take care of them. And finally, my peers would say all the time, oh, you're going to become an ostomy nurse. It's just a matter of time. Mm-hmm. And it was. I soon realized that I needed to do more and learn more about the ostomy patient. And that's when I ended up getting my certification in ostomy, which was toward the end of my career working at the VA. And at that time, had to end up actually starting our wound and ostomy clinic. We initially started out with a 4-hour ostomy clinic, one day a week. And wound care was kind of all over the place. So it was really instrumental in getting our facility set up with a really well-established wound and ostomy clinic. And the more I work with wound patients who were also ostomy patients, the more I've developed a passion now for ostomy care. Mm-hmm. And that has even continued after my retirement. I enjoy working with support groups and trying to act as a liaison between the needs of the community and the frustrations and demands of that ostomy nurse that's working every day.
Wow, nice. So you've really parlayed your passion for nursing and WOC nursing into your retirement time too, it sounds like.
Yes, I have. It's a tremendous joy.
That's great. So I want to know, how did you first meet Dan?
Well, I actually first met Dan working at the VA, of course, and one of the things that really impressed me about Dan when I first met him was he showed up and he had his list of everything that he needed, including the amount. He had the number of product numbers. I mean, he was just so organized. And when I saw him, it was like one of the few occasions where I met an ostomy patient that really didn't have any problems, didn't need any consultation or, hey, fine-tuning in any way. Dan was just well-prepared. And I was just amazed at how much he knew about his whole process, the disease process, the management, the courses. I was really amazed with that and impressed and thought, you know, every patient should have the opportunity to know as much about themselves and their diagnosis and what it means as Dan did. And so just spending that time with him really encouraged me to try to make sure I could impart as much of my knowledge and stress to them. Hey, ask questions. Just keep asking questions and increasing your knowledge and sharing that. So I was quite impressed when I met Dan. It was not my typical patient, that's for sure.
That sounds great. Now, Dan, you met Dr. Henry Lynch, who he was the person, I believe, who discovered that genetic mutation. What was that experience like?
Oh, my gosh. Now, by the way, Joyce, thank you for the opportunity to be able to collaborate with you. Joyce was my first ostomy nurse when I relocated from Hawaii to Northern California. So we have history and we collaborate on different projects here in Northern California. Yeah, so attenuated FAP is a subvariant of FAP. Now, both attenuated FAP and FAP are, the G mutation is the APC mutation in the fifth chromosome. So depending on how old you are, if you're 50 and younger, the diagnosis would be FAP. If you're 50 to 55, it's attenuated FAP. Now, Dr. Henry T. Lynch, the founding father of hereditary cancer research, is credited not just with discovering Lynch syndrome, but with attenuated FAP. Now, little did I know, my colorectal surgeon and my genetic counselor at Tripp were colleagues of Dr. Lynch through the decades. And at the time, he was 86 years old when I got diagnosed. He was the, among other things, the director of preventative medicine at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. And little did I know, 7 months after my surgery, Dr. Lynch shows up in Hawaii to do some academic lectures. So I got to meet him, got introduced to him by my genetic counselor personally in private at the University of Hawaii Cancer Center before one of his lectures. And then we sat down afterwards for an hour and 50 minutes and talked about the mutation. And he mentioned that I had a unique case of AFAP, and he encouraged me to have my routine endoscopic surveillance. And he said, you feel free to send the pathology report to me and I'll review them and give you my feedback and insight. So I did that through the years and was asking lots of email and lots of questions. And then June 2nd of 2019, at 91 and a half years old, he passes away. So at that point, I knew what my purpose in life was to educate medical students and medical professionals about attenuated FAP from a patient's perspective, to continue his legacy in hopes of saving lives. So that's what I've been doing for the last 13 years. And it's amazing. Dr. Lynch joined the Navy in 1944. He dropped out of high school. He used a relative's ID card to get in. And he served on active duty for 2 years. He shared some sea stories. And a couple months after he'd been in, the Navy found out that he was underage, but they let him stay in anyway. He got out of the Navy. And back in the day, they used to have boxing tournaments on ships, and it's called smokers. And he was a good boxer. So when he got out of the Navy, he was boxing. He ended up marrying his neighborhood sweetheart, Jane. And one day, Jane said to Henry, he said, Henry, you're going to have to find another job, a profession, that this boxing gig ain't going to cut it. So he went to the VA and started working to get his credits. So he actually studied in human genetics, clinical psychology, and then he ended up becoming a proctologist back in the late 50s. And he had a lot of his patients that were passing away of colon cancer. So he suspected that colon cancer may not just be environmental, maybe hereditary. So he started applying for grants and he kept getting turned down. They said, Henry, you're way off. He goes, no, I think I'm on to something. So I was born in 1960. So up until the time he passed away in 2019, my entire life, he's been devoted to hereditary cancer research. So the least I can do now is to help continue his legacy. And I do this virtually on an international scale. And I just enjoy this because, I mean, I do everything gratis. This is my way of giving back because of all those decades that Dr. Lynch researched, and we still don't have statistics on attenuated FAP. Now, Dr. Lynch has shared with me that he suspects that less than 0.03% of the global population are impacted by AFAP. However, there's no documentation. I know Dr. Lynch shared that with me. So my hopes are in the decades to come that there'll be some statistics on this. But in the meantime, I can collaborate with the medical students, organizations globally to help and educate the medical students, medical professionals, because they'll have this information for the rest of their medical careers and for the rest of their lives, because when they retire, they like to attend the academic lectures and conferences. So this way is my way of giving back. Wow. So, yeah, it was an incredible experience. And with two shipmates, we ended up crossing paths, you know, after we got out of the military. And how awesome that is that here's this gentleman who dropped out of high school to join the military. And look, now he's known as the founding father of hereditary cancer research in the entire world. And I'm living in the most perfect time because I got to meet Dr. Lynch. I couldn't script this any better.
Yeah, sort of meant to be, right?
Absolutely.
Do you think that your military background has helped you, like, approach both the diagnosis and the treatment and then, like, everything that you've been doing since the surgery? Do you think that's impacted?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. My military experience equipped me to adapt, improvise, and overcome, plan for the worst, hope for the best, take a negative, turn it into a positive. I mean, 4 deployments to the Persian Gulf, 3 of them on ships. You sleep with one eye open, you don't know what's going to happen, if anything. Fortunately, nothing happened. But, you know, like I said, you plan for the worst and hope for the best. And so when I got diagnosed, I went into battle mode in a positive way. In life, we have 2 choices. We can react or we can respond. I choose to respond by gathering information so I can make a logical decision versus shooting from the hip, making a rash decision you may later regret. So, yeah, my military experience, absolutely. And plus my positive attitude. The 2 of them, in my opinion, go together. And that's what's helped me chart this course with this mutation. So, yeah, they go hand in hand, in my opinion.
Yeah. And so that has a little to do with that mantra, which I know about from reading, but I can also see posted behind you, which our listeners can't, unfortunately. And they also can't see your Ostomy Day t-shirt. But anyway, it says, always forge ahead with a purpose. So what does that mean for you?
That is my mantra. It's a positive spin on a bleak diagnosis. And if you take the first letters of each of those words, it spells AFAP.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little cryptic there. I took that off of some readings that I've done of Edgar Allan Poe back when I was in high school. He had a cryptic way to write. So I woke up about a year after my surgery. The first 2 words of my mind were forge ahead. So I quickly turned on the nightlight, wrote it on a piece of paper, and I looked at it. I said, forge ahead with a purpose. And I said, well, wait, that's FAP. I have AFAP, so what am I always doing? Oh, I'm always forging ahead with purpose. There you go.
Wow, another meant-to-be situation, right?
Epiphany.
yeah, for sure. And it seems like the positive attitude, and also you seem to have a good sense of humor, they seem important to you. Is that so? And how has that helped you, do you think?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, humor and positivity. Yeah, that's helped me overcome adversity on so many different levels. I mean, everybody's wired differently, but I have to say my military experience, definitely I draw on that a lot. And the positivity, I mean, I've always been a positive person. And you won't believe this, but I was a really, really shy person growing up, even into the early years of my military. And it wasn't until I started, as you move up in the ranks, you become more for new presentations. So, and then once this came about, my diagnosis, I was ready. I was ready to take this on the road. And literally, that's what I do.
Yeah, that's great.
But yeah, positivity is crucial, and as well as the humor. Yeah, I always like to joke around, but I joke around about myself. So everybody can it just kind of lighten the atmosphere, you know, because some people don't want to talk about what Joyce and I were talking about the other day about bathroom talk, you know, just let it out. There's nothing to be ashamed about. Let's help silence the stigma often associated with the ostomy, whether permanent, temporary, planned or unplanned. Now, mine was planned. Mine's permanent. So I knew about it going in.
Yeah.
But I did my due diligence to try to understand. But theory is one thing. Practical application is another. I have a incredible medical team that I get to collaborate with through the decades, the last decade anyway. But yeah, positive attitude definitely is way up there on the chart for me.
Okay. That's great. Joyce, tell me, do you think there's still a stigma around ostomies? And do you think if there is that people feel isolated or people feel that? What are your thoughts on that whole area?
Oh, I definitely feel there's stigmatization for ostomies because many times when they get that first diagnosis, they are overwhelmed with all the things that they think they can't do. They're fearful of their losses. And so they're looking at everything from a negative perspective, what they've lost, how their lives have changed. They look at interactions that may have changed. And so it makes it hard for them to find anything positive about the fact that they are now approaching an ostomy. And so I kind of see my role as listening to their fears, their frustrations, what are they concerned about, and helping them to refocus to find out, hey, this new surgery is going to make a change in your life, but all the things that you did before, guess what? You're going to still be able to do those. You might have to make a few modifications, but you'll still be able to do those things. And so getting them to focus on being more positive, finding out the challenge, accepting the challenge, getting involved, and not so much focusing on the loss, but hey, learning a new skill, the sharing. Find many patients are really often hesitant to talk about what their concerns are. I think the hardest thing for me was when I'm initially meeting patients is, you know, we ask a question, you know, what are you concerned about? Or do you have any questions? And oftentimes there's this silence. And I had to learn just to be quiet a little bit longer and just lean into that patient so they can feel that, hey, I'm here with you. And finally, guess what? They break the silence and they start to ask questions. And I think that's the most important thing is encourage and promote them to ask questions. As long as they're sitting there smiling and nodding, I often say when that's happening, they're either very bored and wanting this conversation to end, or either they are not understanding a word I'm saying. So I have to back up and kind of get them involved with me. And so that's the most important thing is getting them to share their fears and their caregivers, their significant others. What are their concerns? What are they worried about? How is this going to affect them? What are their relationships going to be like? How is that changed? So that initial diagnosis, it just opens up a whole Pandora's box of questions. And oftentimes, many of these questions are things that can't be answered right away. So that's the importance of maintaining contact with your ostomy nurse. Kind of figure out, hey, as you come up with more questions later on, there's someone there to help you. Getting involved with the support group is another way. Finding, hey, you know what? I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one that had these fears and frustrations. Other people had them, and you find that, hey, they were able to resolve many of these issues by sharing. And I think that's the important thing. It's with the stigma, once you share, you find out, hey, I'm not the only one. It's not the end of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What other challenges have you seen in your practice? I think we all maybe have different populations or different areas we work in, but what would you say are the biggest challenges besides the stigma and the fear of the unknown, I think? What other things would you say you have seen time and time again throughout your years?
I think probably the biggest challenge is, what's going to happen to me? Where am I going to get my supplies? They begin to focus on those things that are very right in front of them. How do I get supplies? Who's going to pay for these supplies? What will I need? Those are major challenges. And especially when I worked in the VA system, that makes it very easy to walk them through exactly how that process will occur. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in the private sector, that takes a little bit more work and a little bit more coordination to help them to understand the process of simply getting the supplies that you need. That, to me, is one of the major challenges. Another big challenge is just finding out what resources are available. It is amazing. Not only do our patients not know these resources, but many of our providers are not aware that there are resources that are available to help our patients, whether it's with education, with advocacy, it could be supplies, it could be support for their caregiver. There are resources, and being able to refer patients for these resources is critical. That's one of the things I think I learned shortly after I retired, and we did an ostomy awareness day. As I'm calling and getting involved, I was surprised to find out how many of our providers just didn't have an idea that there is an Ostomy Awareness Day. What are the resources that they can refer to their patients? How do they go about referring them? So it was a lack of knowledge on both the patient side as well as the provider side. What's available out there and getting that to resolve that transition? What's available? Know the resources, how to refer to them. And then, of course, making sure that resources are kept active. So that was an encouragement for me to develop a wound ostomy resource list. And so I started looking at all the clinics and ended up getting about 9 different categories. It involved clinics. It involved, hey, how do you determine whether or not your nurse is truly a certified ostomy nurse? Many of our patients didn't know the difference between a certified ostomy nurse and a just ostomy nurse. Almost any nurse can say, I'm an ostomy nurse, simply because they're taking care of ostomy patients.
Right.
And so helping patients to understand that difference makes a big difference. So resources, I think, are one of the major issues that they have and how to get attached to those resources. And that's both for patient as well as providers.
Okay, great. And what suggestions do you have, Joyce, about supporting like the caregiver or the families of somebody with maybe a new ostomy? So I sometimes experience like the caregiver will do every single thing for the person with the new ostomy, or they're completely hands off and aren't able to do any type of like physical help or support. And so what kind of strategies have you found to help people like that? Because sometimes the person having the procedure gets a lot of support and attention, but maybe the caregivers don't as much. What do you think about all that?
I think from the very beginning, I tried to find out, the first question I ask is, who's your significant other? Who's going to be your caregiver to help you through this? And so when I'm talking with the patient, I'm also involved with their caregiver. So it's like a team effort with the focus being on, this ostomy belongs to you. So it's your job to take care of it. The caregiver is there just to help you, someone that you can share things with. A good example of why it's important for the patient to know how to take care of themselves. I had an incident shortly before I retired where the emergency room called because they had an 80-year-old gentleman in the emergency room who had a colostomy, had had it for some 25 years. And his wife did all the care. Unfortunately, she was hospitalized and having a mastectomy. And so really not able to help him. He had 3 adult children. None of them knew anything about an ostomy. And unfortunately, at this time, the patient had some mental deficits. He was not able to care for himself. So he shows up in the emergency room with a towel and plastic bags over his stomach. And so I had the opportunity at that point to try to not only work with the patient, but also to teach family who had never been involved or even aware. In fact, one of the children didn't even realize that the father had an ostomy. So it's really important that you deal with a significant other or caregiver so that there's that partner in case things change. You always need to have that backup. And that's what's important. The backup is important. And we as professionals can't always be that backup. We need to make sure that there is another team member out there. That's that caregiver. They are just as important in that patient's recovery as working with us in the medical team. Yeah. If there isn't that support system, it's going to be a very challenging and difficult recovery for the patient.
Yeah, that's my experience too. Dan, what do you do about like long-term cancer screenings? Do you have to do anything since you've had the surgery? Tell us about that if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The mutation requires routine endoscopic surveillance. So up until 2020, I was getting annual surveillance, so EGD, side view scope, and then a single or double blind enteroscopy. Then the reason I ended up in California is because I need to be close to Palo Alto VA Medical Center because there's no facility in Hawaii that can accommodate or is credited to have a single or double blind enteroscopy performed. So the surveillance in 2020 revealed a 3-centimeter adenoma in my jejunum, about 30 centimeters down. And as a result, my GI doctor, who happened to be the director of the GI clinic at Palo Alto, recommended that I have surgery, which I thought would be the Whipple procedure. Well, he said, well, we have a newer technology in the last 25 years. It's a pancreas sparing duodenectomy resection. Now, that's a lot to digest, but it's specifically for individuals who have the APC mutation, if my memory serves me. Now, I said, okay, well, what are my options? I want that surgery. What are my options? And he mentioned Johns Hopkins, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, MD Anderson. He mentioned Stanford. I said, well, Stanford's 2 miles up the road. I like that option. Would you happen to know a surgeon at Stanford that can do this surgery? He goes, there's a surgeon that's done this procedure for two of my patients and they're fine. I said, I'd like to get his name. So the VA referred me to the surgeon, one of the nation's leading pancreatic surgeons at Stanford. He accepted my case and I sat down a month later to talk to him. And we scheduled the surgery, had that successfully. Now, as a result of that surgery, they removed 60 centimeters of my duodenum or duodenum, depends on who you talk to, what day of the week it is. Removed my gallbladder. He had sense of humor, got to have that. And then he inserted a 5 French pancreatic stent. And I continued to go about my life. It took me a while to recover from that, a big surgery again. I go about my life as if nothing happened. So now I have to go. I go every other year. So I just had the surveillance this past August. And he didn't find any polyps in my jejunum.
Good.
Hey, perfect. So by the way, my GI doctor, Palo Alto, is actually faculty at Stanford. He's on loan to the VA. Now, he's the only GI doctor that can touch me. And I have conversations with him before my procedure. And when I wake up, but I'm sedated, I wake up and I'm ready to be, okay, what did you find? Here's the pictures. I got a binder, a 3-inch binder. It's about 120 pages, double-sided. I keep everything. It's all part of my chronological, you know, I got the pathology reports. And then I share it. I was actually in pre-op in Stanford for the surgery. And I had the binder on my lap and the gurney as I did my IV already. And the staff was looking at it. So what's that? And I showed them the children picture. Oh, I'll be right back. They took my binder into their wherever they went to the nurse's station. They came back about 10 minutes later and made the biggest. They were just like, wow, this is cool. I never knew. See, that's part of the journey. Educate as you go. Sharing on my way with surgery. I'll share them with them.
Good for you.
Yeah, the surveillance. And where we go from here? I have no idea. No one knows. Everybody's body's different. You can only go by what the history of the APC mutation, what happens with individuals with that, you know, as the years go on. Just continue to ask questions. You know, I'm what a lot of my medical colleagues call me, a pleasant pest. I just keep asking questions. But you know what? Other folks may say you have to advocate for yourself, but I just like to ask questions. There's always something out there that I think about in the middle of the night and I'll be, okay, I got to ask that question. But yeah, so I continue to go to, I'm a patient at the Stanford Cancer Center for the rest of my life. As long as I'm in this area, I'm just an hour and a half north of Stanford. And I talk with my family members. I'm asymptomatic, no family history. But another thing Dr. Lynch mentioned, that when my parents passed away, my paternal relatives all passed away. I'm the youngest of my siblings, the youngest of my first cousins. And Dr. Lynch said, well, it's very well possible the mutation started with you and it will end with me because I don't have any biological children. Now, did it skip a generation? I mean, we may never know because DNA testing wasn't available back then. However, my first cousins and my siblings are well informed about my journey. When my second cousins turn 45, if they decide to get a colonoscopy, we'll go from there.
Right.
Now, the colonoscopy is a gold standard because that's what those biopsies afforded me, the opportunity to have the DNA testing. So that's why I always like to mention the colonoscopy being the gold standard. It's up to the individual what they want to do. You know, I don't tell people what to do. I just hope that I'm a source of inspiration and encouragement. And then they talk to their family members, talk to their doctor, their medical team to make a logical decision. But my screening continues to go on, and there's a very small circle in my medical team that I can communicate with that understand what I have. I have a medical geneticist, I have a VA medical geneticist, a VA certified genetic counselor, And then I have a certified genetic counselor at Stanford, plus my GI doctor, and then my pancreatic surgeon. But where the journey goes from here, everybody I've talked to, we have no idea. Always ask questions and continue with the screening. It's very important. But everybody's got their own way of doing things, you know?
Every person's different, too, and their whole presentation of whatever it is might be different than yours was.
Absolutely.
And so besides asking a lot of questions, what other advice would you give somebody that was about to have an ostomy surgery or has a new diagnosis? So be informed and ask questions. You've said a couple times is really important. What else? Anything that you would say to somebody new that was talking to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But my questions I've been asking, the responses I get are, okay, yeah, check out the United Ostomy Association of America. Check a Colon Cancer Alliance, Colon Cancer Coalition. I'm part of the Colon Cancer Prevention Project for about a decade now. But I communicate with them and try to pick the brains of the medical professionals in those organizations. And the UOA is from the onset. I mean, I was communicating with the UOA before I even had my surgery. And I was just that proactive. I was already trying to figure out, okay, I'm reading about theories, one thing, practical application. And I had a great ostomy nurse there at WOCN at Tripwork. That started my journey. But I was asking questions even before my DNA test results came back. I had 6 weeks. I had access to my GI doctor, my primary care, the chief of surgery, the colorectal surgeon, and the certified genetic counselor at Tripwork. So that's what started it too. And it's just, you know, when we go on deployments, we have to go through a lot of training for these pre-deployment evolutions. And so once again, when I got diagnosed, I went into battle mode in a positive way. So as my journey continues, I am always following up and asking lots of questions and talking, looking at these resources and communicating with the individuals from the organizations. And not, like I said, not just nationally, but internationally. It's amazing. I mean, ostomates are everywhere. And this mutation is in different countries. And it's pretty cool to be able to communicate, collaborate on projects with medical students and medical professionals on a global scale. And I've been doing that through emails for years. And then since 2020, we do it virtually on these video calls. That's the best thing ever. Like I said, take the negative, turn it into a positive. I mean, really, I'm living on borrowed time. I look at my life, I'm living in extra innings, okay? And the reason I say that, baseball is my favorite pastime, watching baseball. When a baseball game goes into extra innings, I like to think of that as free baseball. Because what does life and baseball have in common? Neither have a time limit. So when a game goes into extra innings, that's free baseball. Well, I look at my life as in extra innings because I had the diagnosis. We got it ahead of time. I never had cancer. Okay? I never had pancreatic cancer, never had colon cancer. It's all about prevention. This is the work that Dr. Lynch has been doing ever since the late 50s, early 60s, up until he passed away. It's all about the importance of preventative measures.
Do either of you think that that makes it tough for signing up for ostomy surgery? I find sometimes that the patients that I have, that I work with, feel fine. And so then it's very hard for them to sign up for this big life-altering procedure in their eyes. Is that your experience too?
Mine was planned. Mine's permanent. So I was knocking at the door. Let's go. Let's get this going. Let's get the party started. I mean, I love it. I really do. I mean, Joyce can at this. I enjoy this. I mean, just like baseball is a game of adjustments. Well, in life, we have to make adjustments.
Right.
And actually, I'll just say this, and I'll let Joyce share her thoughts. The word ADAPT, I created an acronym for it. Attitude determines the ability for a positive transformation.
That's another good one.
That's an epiphany. I just write this stuff. It comes to my mind and, you know, but that was just negative. I send out positive vibes. I get that back tenfold.
Of course.
And so
of course.
That keeps me going.
Yeah, you know? That's great. What about you, Joyce? Did you ever have that experience? Because often my patients like feel fine. So they're sort of shocked unless they have known other family members that have had it. Well, I'm fine. I feel great.
I think that's true not only for ostomates, but also true for those patients who are going to have an amputation. They're looking at what they're seeing on the outside. You know, hey, I feel fine. There's nothing different about me. And that's what's really important about this. surveillance, that early identification of a problem. And so oftentimes that also is a great part of the denial. That kind of sets you up, well, this can't be true because I don't feel sick.
Yeah.
I don't see anything different. And so that kind of reinforces your denial. And I see my role as trying to help the patient understand that we're getting this before you can see it. Yes. Taking care of that problem before it becomes recognizable to you and everyone else. Think of it like maintenance on your car. You know, if you don't do that timely maintenance and the car is going to be running fine and everything's going great, but you fail to keep up the maintenance, you go to get in your car one day and it's not working. And that's the same thing that happens with us if we pay attention and get those early prevention measures and follow up on them, that we're taking care of things long before they become problematic. A small problem becomes a major issue
right.
if it's not
right.
taken care of early. So that is not the typical patient. So most
right,
patients, again,
right.
most patients, again, are not very receptive and open to the fact that they need to have an ostomy. They're thinking of all the reasons they shouldn't.
And you're right.
Right. It's undaunting to think that, hey, I feel fine. I don't look any different. So why do I need to have this surgery? And that can take a lot of active listening to get patients to come to grips with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
About maintenance, Joyce, you gave me a great segue into what I wanted to share about the importance of maintenance, about especially a vehicle. I remember in 1980, there was a Fram oil commercial on TV, and the gentleman at the counter, he was holding up a Fram oil filter, and he was talking about the importance of getting your routine oil check, or change. And the guy behind him was rebuilding an engine on the workbench, and the guy at the counter was saying, you could pay me now for an oil change. And then the guy behind him says, well, you can pay me later for a rebuilt engine. So in other words, the GI doctor is holding up the oil filter, and then a colorectal surgeon's working on rebuilding the engine. I thought of that in 1980. It's on YouTube. You can check it out. I watch it periodically. I kind of use that for the guys, especially because the guys are, we're guys, right? So it kind of like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. If you're not using a metaphor, you have to use like illustrations and how you can adapt this particular commercial or saying into life with an ostomy or the importance of having an ostomy. I was asymptomatic. I was working 2 full-time jobs. I had no idea any of this stuff was going on inside my body.
Yeah.
But I knew when I turned 50, schedule colonoscopy. That's the gold standard.
Good thing you did, right? Good thing you did.
After the rolling, yeah. And I actually put it off for 6 months. I put it off for 6 months at the time I was previously married and she didn't want to take me. And I was just trying to figure out how I was going to get the, but I put it off for 6 months. So the reason, the importance, say, don't be stubborn. I was stubborn for a couple months there. I knew I needed it, but I couldn't get there.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Anyway.
Now, you've both led some efforts as far as proclamations and resolutions about hereditary colon cancers and ostomy awareness and have worked together on that from what I understand. So what drives that advocacy work, would you say?
Well, early on, I was collaborating with the United Ostomy Associates of America and the Colon Cancer Alliance. And that's where all the idea about the proclamation, because those organizations have these campaigns and you try to get your local legislative members involved. Now, once I relocated to California a couple of years ago, I reached out to the senator in the district I reside and asked if he would be interested in sponsoring the campaign for Ostomy Awareness Day. And I said, would you be interested in writing up a commemorative message? And Senator Roger Neal goes, I'll do better than that. I will author a Senate concurrent resolution. And this was the campaign for 2023. And I will read the resolution on the Senate floor, and I'll invite you to attend and sit in the gallery. And then he introduced it to the Senate floor. It passed 37-0. Out of 40 possible. And then I ended up a couple weeks later, he invited me to his office and had the framed, signed the Senate concurrent resolution. So then last year, I asked him if he would be interested in sponsoring a colorectal cancer awareness month proclamation. for the month of March, and which we did, and I got to go back to the Capitol for that. This year, I piggybacked on a campaign with my colleague, one of my colleagues in Michigan, who began the FAP Awareness Week campaign. The third week, he designates the third week of June as FAP Awareness Week. And so I asked Senator Nilo if he would be interested in sponsoring that campaign. And we had another Senate concurrent resolution. And I got invited to the Capitol, and that passed 34-0.
Wow.
And then for World Ostomy Day, I asked if we can have a resolution. And with everything else going on in the legislative session, he said, what I can do is I can get a member resolution for your member. You know, so that actually is done. And I just got an email yesterday that they're finalizing how either they can drop it off at my house or I can meet them at his office to pick it up. It's just something I want to do. And then the local newspaper carries no cover. In fact, Joyce and I were in a couple of weeks ago, Gold Herald. I live in Gold Herald, featured an article, a front page, actually. Really was impressed with that because I figured it would be coming out this week. It came out 2 weeks ago. Right. I mean, how cool that is. So I got copies. It's kind of like that song about something about being on the cover of the Rolling Stone magazine with that group boys that did that song in the 70s. Yeah. I went down extra copies. And so that's
good
my
for
way.
You. Good for you.
Have fun with it, you know. Like I said, it's all about trying to help silence the stigma. Nothing to be ashamed about, nothing to be embarrassed. You can go about life as if nothing happened. I mean, I have limitations, but I know what my limitations are. But yeah, the advocacy is very important on many levels, not just nationally, not just locally, but nationally and internationally as well.
Sure, sure. Joyce, why do you think it's important for us as healthcare professionals to support patient-led advocacy? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, definitely. The patient should be our focus. It's the center of everything. And we're feeding into their needs, their desires. Where are they going to go with the future? What are their concerns? And if we don't carry that central focus, then we can become disjointed. It's just like the advocacy. I've been trying for several years now to get the governor to issue a proclamation for the state of California. And I tell you, I work at it each year. I write and I call and have not been successful. So teamed up with Dan, I thought he's having such great luck, maybe pairing up with Dan again, looking at here's a patient who has the problem. So maybe the two of us working together can have more success at getting a governor of California to issue a proclamation. Patient-led advocacy, patient-led care, that should be our focus for any healthcare delivery system. If the patient isn't the center, then we're kind of wasting all of our energies and our effort.
That's huge, for sure.
Yeah, there's an old saying I came across not too long ago. It sums up my journey. I'm like a woodpecker in a petrified forest. I'll keep him busy looking for opportunities.
Hey, you are funny.
You got to have fun with this, right? I didn't write that, but you know what? I'd love to take credit for it.
It's a good one, for sure.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do next? So you do a lot of things together. And do you have plans for like your advocacy efforts in the near future or the coming years? Tell me about that.
I think I am very fortunate to work in an area where we have both a face-to-face and a virtual ostomy support group, especially at a time when many, unfortunately, of the support groups for ostomies are disbanding. And in the Sacramento area here, we have both. And at one point, there was a thought that we may lose the virtual group, but have been able to pull that together and to keep that focus. And so for me, that's my focus, is to be able to see these two support groups thrive and become more active and making sure that the providers are aware that, hey, this group is here to help. That's going to be a big focus for me for the future, making sure those resources are available, that providers are aware. You don't have to know all the answers, but it does help if you know where to go to get some answers. And that's what a lot of times our resource guides will do is help direct so that a lot of time isn't lost looking for things that may not be there. And in some instances, they're sitting right in front of you. Just need to take a look, have someone to guide you. So that's kind of my focus for the future, is to keep the support groups going and see them grow.
Nice. How about you, Dan? Do you have next steps lined up? You strike me as a planful kind of guy, which is great. So what are you thinking about for the future as far as advocacy is concerned?
We continue on with the campaigns for Ostomy Awareness Day and the FAP Awareness. The last day of February every year is Rare Disease Day. And I have actually two rare diseases. So I'll reach out to Senator Nilo in a month or two and touch base with his chief of staff to see if he's interested in authoring a Senate concurrent resolution for a Rare Disease Day. This is another one that I haven't done for as far as the resolution goes. But yeah, just continue all that. We do have the Sacramento County Board of Supervisors that sponsor our campaigns. So we actually got an email yesterday that the Board of Supervisors resolution or proclamation is either put in the mail yesterday or be put in the mail today.
Oh, nice.
So I'll be sending that. And that's designating October 4th tomorrow as World Ostomy Day in the Sacramento County.
Oh, good. Oh, great.
Yeah. Just plugging away here. It's all about educating, you know, because there's so many individuals, the legislative members, that don't know what this is and didn't realize that there's campaigns out there on behalf of the UAA or the rare disease community. So I just keep pressing on. And I do this, I'm a full-time caregiver for my wife, caregiver, caretaker, care provider. So I do just about everything for her and help her out and help us out, you know. And that's where I'm at. And I have these ideas that come up and I'll bounce them off to Joyce, say, hey, what do you think about this? And then we just put it on the calendar, plan it, and see, just test the waters and see what happens.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't come to fruition this year, well, we try again next year.
Right. So you sound like you have a good working relationship, you two.
Yeah, I try to, but I bounce ideas off of Joyce, and she knows a lot more medical professionals in different areas than I do, so it works out really nice.
Good.
But patient-driven, and then having an ostomy nurse, a retired ostomy nurse, I mean, it's like the perfect thing. Plus, she was my first ostomy nurse here in the VA in California. So
okay.
It goes back to the year 2016, so that's 9 years of history there alone.
Yeah, so you know how to work well together, it sounds like, and you've perfected that.
All we can do is try.
That's right. I want to know from both of you, what do you do to like keep yourself grounded and enthused and to help get everything done that you both are doing? Like, do you have any hobbies or strategies that you use to keep up the momentum, to keep moving forward with all of this, besides the passion you both have?
Grounded. I love gardening.
Oh, okay.
Just get your hands in the dirt. That's therapeutic. And I learned something years ago. What do plants and ostomates have in common? We both have stomas. In the world of botany, it's called a stomata.
Yeah.
Okay. In the medical, it's a stoma. So, and then we enjoy growing sugar snap peas in the fall and winter here where we are. And Gregor Mendel, the founding father of genetics. So he was messing around with, you know, both saying about Gregor Mendel, giving peas a chance since 1865.
Yeah.
And so I cook out together, you know, it's like, hey, let's have fun with this. Plus, I love 10% of peas, but I love gardening and that's therapeutic. I have my dogs out there with me. They like to eat the tomatoes and the sugar snap peas when I give it something. But that's a good balance for me. The outside, working with the soil, the plants. I call my puppies the Critter Squad. They're out there and chasing a squirrel and blue jays. And we have a lot of volunteer plants, volunteer trees in the area because the blue jays sit on the fence line and drop, make their deposit in their seeds and their waste. And we have elderberry trees growing back there now.
Oh, wow.
Also sawtooth palms growing, fig trees. Gosh, I mean, a half a dozen fig trees growing. I didn't plant it. And we have a Cayuga grapevine that grows the last many years. So I enjoy going out, like, okay, I haven't seen that before. What is that? I have to look and research what that is. So that's the balance in my life.
Okay. That's a good one. You see good results with that pretty quickly, too, sometimes, which is nice. You see changes when you work.
Yeah.
How about you, Joyce? What's your thing that you do to keep yourself moving forward and excited and passionate about all of this?
I think the first thing that Dan said, being grounded. And for me, I started with meditation and prayer, keeping myself grounded, focusing on what I needed to do to stay whole and healthy. Even during my career when working, you're working so hard, you're concentrating so much on meeting demands of others or the system, you forget about the most important person, and that's yourself.
Right.
And so find that energy that causes you to just settle down, focus on you. Dan and I share one thing. He's a big gardener, but I used to love to go at the end of the season and get those dead plants at Home Depot or Walmart and then take that little plant home. And the joy of seeing, oh, yeah, the leaves are starting to turn green again. And wow, I see a little flower. And I've got little pieces of dead plants that I collected years ago, and I still have a growing plant. It kind of gives me a joy of seeing just what being patient, diligent, what can happen when you're patient and diligent. And that keeps me focused and grounded. And then I laugh, of course. I enjoy old movies. And so watching old movies, and sometimes with my daughter and even my nieces, we kind of get together for a movie fest, watching old movies.
Oh, fun. That sounds like a fun way to spend a day. All right. What else is important that I haven't asked you? Maybe, Dan, I'll start with you. I've kept you a long time, and I really appreciate all the info you've given us. And it's really exciting to talk to you. But anything else that I didn't ask you that maybe I should have asked you about?
No, we covered a lot of territory. I think we covered it.
Okay. I'm so happy to have you. I think you should come back another time, the two of you. What do you think?
After next year, another opportunity.
Yeah, version two. Yeah. That would be great.
Hopefully at that time we can say, hey, we finally convinced the California governor to give us a proclamation.
There you go. There you go.
That's a way to look in a book and positive outlook. I like that.
That's right. Persistence pays off, right?
Yes, it does.
All right. Thank you both for joining me today. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Walk Talk. We so appreciate your being part of our community. If you'd like to join the WOCN Society or renew your membership, you can save $10 with the promo code LISTEN25. Just visit WOCN.org and click join or log in to get started. We hope to see you there. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Walk Talk.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Walk Talk. Please visit WOCN.org/podcast for additional details about this topic and the speakers. You can also get more information about subscribing to this podcast so you never miss an episode, and to get the latest news and information from the WOCN Society. Again, that's WOCN.org/podcast. We look forward to having you join us for the next episode of Walk Talk.